The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Well, it's obvious that the Russians wanted Hillary Clinton. That's very, very obvious. As we continue the show in our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Still the tributes for Ozzy Osbourne coming in. Front page of the New York Post today. That's all, folks. Night over for Prince of Darkness. The biting tale is interesting about the bat. Of course, I made some, quip yesterday about how he was patient zero with COVID because he bit the head off a bat. So here's the story about that. It's very interesting. Ozzy Osbourne will be remembered as the Prince of Darkness, but even in death, his infamous 1982 bat-biting incident will be cemented in rock history. The wild event unfolded on January 20th, 1982, at the Des Moines Veterans Memorial Auditorium during his Diary of a Madman tour. At the time, the rocker developed a sickening ritual where he'd throw raw meat at concertgoers and they'd toss whatever bizarre item they snuck into the show right back. During this performance in particular, someone shucked a real bat on the stage, which the Black Sabbath singer mistakenly thought was fake. To the audience's horror, Osbourne's mouth filled with blood and he immediately knew he had been fooled. The paranoid singer spoke about the moment in a 2020 documentary, The Nine Lives of Ozzy Osbourne, and said, "I thought it was a rubber bat. I picked it up, put it in my mouth, crunched down, bit into it, being the clown that I am." Noting that bats are the biggest carriers of rabies in the world, he explained what happened after. "I had to go to the hospital afterward and get rabies shots, one in each rear," he said. That's not fun. So I never knew that. I always thought he ripped the head off a bat and ate it, like, intentionally. I didn't know any better. I mean, I always thought that was a thing, but no, it wasn't. And Susie Cool shared this sweet tribute to Ozzy that where he talked about it at his farewell performance, just how sick he was with this Parkinson's disease and how he couldn't stand or anything like that. Had to do the whole last show sitting down. Sharon Osbourne, obviously, the whole family, very, very sad by this, very, very upset. So he's a legend, and he'll always be a legend, and legends never die. The fact that the media is now spinning it, that this is all coming out to distract from Epstein, that's just not true. I mean, Epstein's not going away. This is why I keep saying Republicans need to not ignore this and they need to take Epstein head on. It's not going to go away and this is not going to distract everybody from this. But that is the media talking point. That's the media narrative. Our friends over at the Media Research Center pointing this out, that yes, the corporate media is doing their thing and they're saying that this is a distraction and that's why this is being done and that's all this is. Here's ABC's Mary Bruce. Take a listen to this.
Trump, clearly frustrated by the Epstein story, today tried to shift the spotlight onto Barack Obama, baselessly accusing the former president of treason in the 2016 election.
He's guilty. This was treason. This was every word you can think of. They tried to steal the election.
Trump falsely claiming Obama deliberately manufactured and politicized intelligence reports about Russian interference in the 2016 election. Tonight, in a rare rebuke, Obama firing back, his spokesman pointing to the widely accepted conclusion that Russia worked to influence the 2016 presidential election, but did not successfully manipulate any votes, noting those findings were affirmed by Republicans in Congress, including Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Spokesman adding, "These bizarre allegations are ridiculous and a weak attempt at distraction."
Now, Marco Rubio, for his point, pointing out that
Trump, clearly frustrated by the Epstein story today,
pointing out that at the time when all this was happening, they did not have access to all the documents that are now coming out now. And that the whole question of whether or not Russia was successful in manipulating the election, the answer was no. That conclusion is still true. The difference, though, is that we didn't know, and they didn't know in 2020, that it was Obama and Clapper and Comey and Brennan pushing everybody to believe that Russia had been trying to get Donald Trump elected president. That's the difference. Everybody was made to believe that Russia was trying to get Donald Trump to be elected president of the United States of America. That is not true. Russia was not trying to get Donald Trump elected president of the United States of America. If anything, you can argue that they were trying to get Hillary Clinton elected. I think they were. I really do. I think they were. And let's not forget all the different media hacks that went out there and said Russia, Russia, Russia. Stephen Colbert in 2019. In 2019, an 8-minute monologue about Russia. Here's just a minute of that, because I'm not going to bore you with all 20 minutes of it. But here's just a minute of that.
Welcome to The Late Show, everybody. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. It's not every day. Thank you very much. It's not every day that you can say, hey, did you see the big story about Trump being an agent of the Russian government over the weekend?
Oh, my goodness.
No, not that story. The other one. Okay, couple stories. Let's take them through one at a time. Okay, first, there's the Times. The New York Times revealed that after Donald Trump fired James Comey in 2017, the FBI opened an inquiry into whether Trump was secretly working on behalf of Russia. Which, come on, no. I think that's ridiculous. There is nothing secret about it. He's just putting it out there. One damn thing. I've been talking about Trump playing footsie with Putin since July of 2016, back at the Republican convention. But when you look at the details, it's still shocking. Welcome to The Late Show, everybody. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert.
Let's think about this for a second. Part of the reason why Stephen Colbert is done, okay, is because he's not funny and he was a political activist. He was a political activist and that's what he was doing. That's number one. That's part of the reason. But number two is, and this is why even this morning on CBS, Tony DiCupoli had no sympathy for Stephen Colbert. No sympathy whatsoever. And CBS obviously is the parent company here. Tony DiCupoli and CBS Mornings, because I'm telling you what Stephen Colbert's goal is, all right? Stephen Colbert's goal is to get fired. He wants to be a political martyr. He wants to be a political martyr. That's why when Mr. Wonderful, Kevin O'Leary, was saying that he's not going to survive this, he's not going to make this. Mark my words, he won't make this. They're going to get rid of him. They're going to fire him. I don't think so. I hope they don't. I hope they let him ride his contract out till May. I really do. Because what Stephen Colbert wants to do, and the reason why he's telling everybody at CBS to F off, and he wants to be a political martyr. He wants to go down as the guy who got pushed out because he needs a new platform. And there's no better way to start a new platform than having been canceled. You get to turn around and say you've been canceled, and then you launch your platform. You're the victim. Oh, he is dying for that to happen. Versus I'm the guy that lost $40 million for the network. I'm the guy that was not profitable for the network, and that's why I'm out of a job. No. It's that I got canceled because I spoke truth to power. I went after Trump, and CBS and Paramount are corrupt, and that's why I'm out of a job. Come find me on YouTube or find me on whatever platform I'm on and support me and give me donations. And that's what he's trying to do here. So I don't agree with Kevin O'Leary. I hope Kevin O'Leary's wrong, but this is what he said.
He got fired before Trump said a word. 46.2.
Actually, Trump called for his firing last.
Very simple explanation.
Okay, let me respond to what you said. Trump called for his firing last fall, just to be clear.
Let's talk about what actually happened. $46.2 million in losses on a franchise that's 40 years old. It's old, it's dead, and unfortunately for all of the category, people are geometrically not watching late night TV anymore.
True. That's true.
Here's the problem for Colbert. His contract is a payout contract through a transaction where there's a change of control. Only a moron would tell the president to F off before he gets his check. Okay? So what's going to happen now, in my opinion, is tomorrow, CBS, his boss will fire him, and they will litigate for the next 5 years his payout.
Fire who? Stephen Colbert?
So now you're saying this guy.
Oh, no.
So now you're saying they're really going to fire him
them,
for saying
I'd
mean things?
I want to
go back to something.
He will never get his check.
I don't think he's right, but that's what Colbert wants. That's what Jon Stewart wants for Colbert. They want him to go out as the martyr. They want him to go out as a victim so then they can turn around and they can say, oh, poor baby, and have everybody flock to go see him. Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's the bottom line. And when Tony DiCupoli this morning on CBS Mornings was explaining how you shouldn't feel any sympathy for Stephen Colbert, he's exactly right in his analysis here, even though Gayle King and the others on the show that I don't watch, that nobody watches. I mean, that's the other thing, too. Not only are these late night franchises, they're over. These morning show television franchises are also over, too. I mean, these things are dinosaurs. Television is a dinosaur. I mean, look, radio's a dinosaur. That's why we're all trying to find ways to make sure that you can listen to us on all the streaming platforms. But I've said it again, and I'll say it before. It is about personality. It is about personality. It is about personality. So if I'm gone tomorrow, you'll find me. I'll be on a podcast. I'll be on YouTube. I'll be on a platform. You just have to search it and find it, and you'll find me. And I hope you'll be there. But that's the reality of life, and I get that. And you could either be a baby about it and whine about it, or you can just accept that fact. If they flip our station tomorrow to Polka, I'm not going to stop doing what I'm doing. I'm just going to do it on a different platform. If tomorrow AM radio ceases to exist, I'm going to keep doing this on a different platform, and you'll find me. I'll find you. I'll never let go, Jack. That was for you, Matt DeSantis, since your favorite movie is Titanic. Here's what Tony DiCupoli said.
That's why people are reacting the way that they are.
No, I understand the emotional things, but I don't have an MBA, but he's not right that the merger, the $8 billion is based on reruns of a comedy show. No, people are buying the movies and the sitcoms and the sports, but they're not based on reruns of us either. So I think he's wrong about that.
He's saying that it contributed to it.
He's saying it's all encompassing, the total package of it. That already happened in the past. And he also acknowledged that these late night shows are what he called like a blockbuster kiosk inside a Tower record. So the business is broken. And what no one seems to acknowledge is that the politics also changed. The business changed, and so did the politics. And it got way more one-sided than anything Johnny Carson was ever doing. I think we should reflect on those changes as well. It's been a big shift culturally in that regard also.
I hear you, but I think many people feel there's another way to do it. You know, it's a very difficult position to be in, to disagree with something that the company's doing, but also still loving your job and loving what you do. I feel for Stephen Colbert.
I feel for the whole staff of both those shows and whatever comes next for everybody.
I do too.
I think people will miss those shows when they're gone.
Yes.
No doubt. And I don't believe that he's going anywhere when it comes to this industry. He's going to land somewhere for sure.
All right, let's talk.
But if you haven't seen Jon Stewart's monologue, it's worth.
It is indeed.
Jon Stewart's monologue is worth watching. And he's right when he says that we are a blockbuster video kiosk inside of Tower Records. The late night comedy format. But that's every entertainment format. And the only way around that is to create a loyal bond with your audience so that your audience goes wherever the platform changes next. That's it. And I mean, that's just the reality of this. Blockbuster video went away, but people still watch movies. Movie theaters will eventually go away. You know, I'm sad to say that, but that's just the truth. I mean, based on the fact I go to the movies, I like taking my kids to the movies. It's fun, but I like that. But I know that the reality is that these things are dinosaurs, too. People like to watch things on their schedule when they want to. And nowadays, you go to a movie and the first 25 minutes of that movie, like if the movie start time is 7 p.m., the movie doesn't come on until 7:30. You got a half hour of commercials, previews, and now they're putting commercials in the previews. So you watch previews, you think you're done, right? You sat through the commercials, and then all of a sudden there's a commercial, and then there's more previews, and then there's the movie. So, I mean, the other day we were 15 minutes. I hate being late to movies. I just don't like it. I like being on time for everything in life, but we were late. I knew we weren't going to miss anything because we had 25, 30 minutes of nonsense to go. But the reality is that he didn't help himself by being such a divisive D-bag and making the shows so unwatchable at 11:30 at night when people were used to, conditioned to, watching something fun and funny before they went to bed to help unwind after a long day. That didn't help. No doubt about it. But CBS is shutting that down because that idea of late night comedy, quote unquote, that's over. And they're dinosaurs. So what he's trying to do now, and trust me when I tell you this, is he's trying to be a baby and go out in a way that he can say that I'm the victim here, I'm the martyr. And this is why when Megyn Kelly says, you know, man up and stop whining, I agree with her, except that no, Megyn, that's literally his strategy here. His literal strategy is to be the whiny baby so that people feel sorry for him and think he's the victim. This is what she said. Oh, that's the big story of the hour, brought to you by Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VanariaDental, VanariaDental.com, with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, VanariaDental.com. As a video, oh yeah, because it had curse words in it and everything else. And all right, well, she basically said, you know, man up, stop being a baby. People have been canceled before and haven't acted like a baby like this, but he's acting like a baby like this because he wants to act like a baby like this because he's hoping to be the victim and the martyr. That's what he's hoping for. All right, we'll be right back. More to come in our fourth and final hour. Do not go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Earlier today, we went into some detail on Tulsi Gabbard and what she said at the White House press podium today. What I want to do now, though, for this part of the show is I want to go through it in detail with you because I think every word of it is incredibly important to hear. And it's hard to do that sometimes, to go through the whole thing. But I grabbed the audio and I want to go through it with you and include some of the questions from the White House press corps because it's incredible. I mean, it started with Caroline Leavitt, which I played earlier in the show today, just going after the mainstream media and just laying it. You know, well, I mean, I'll play what she said, what Caroline Leavitt said to the media, and she said it's truly one of the most disgraceful scandals ever. This is at the start of this. Then I want to get into Tulsi Gabbard and what she said. But just listen to this real quick from Caroline Leavitt.
Here. History and reporters at legacy outlets, some of which are sitting in this room today, like the New York Times and the Washington Post, were ridiculously awarded Pulitzer Prizes for their perpetuation of this hoax. It's well past time for those awards to be stripped from the journalists who receive them. Oh. It is not journalism to propagate political disinformation in service of the Democrat Party and those in the intelligence community who hand over out of context and fake intelligence to push a false political narrative.
Boom. Now, one of the things I love about talk radio is that I can get into these topics in detail with you. And that's what we're going to do right now. So I'm going to play Tulsi Gabbard. I'm going to talk through it, but I'm going to play what she said today at the White House. We're going to go through it together. And this is important. This is important stuff. I think the greatest political scandal of our lifetime, bigger than Biden's mush brain, and I thought that was the greatest political scandal of our lifetime. All right, here we go.
Principal interests relating to the 2016 election were to undermine faith in the U.S. democratic process, not show any preference of a certain candidate. In fact, this report shows Putin held back from leaking compromising material on Hillary Clinton prior to the election, instead planning to release it after the election to weaken what Moscow viewed as an inevitable Clinton presidency. In the January 2017 intelligence community assessment that President Obama ordered, John Brennan, who was CIA director at the time, and the intelligence community intentionally suppressed intelligence that showed Putin was saving the most damaging material that he had in his possession about Hillary Clinton until after her potential and likely victory. The report goes into great detail about the information that Russia and Putin had, which on Hillary Clinton, which included possible criminal acts, like secret meetings with multiple named U.S. religious organizations in which State Department officials offered, in exchange for supporting Secretary Clinton's campaign for the presidency, significant increases in financing from the State Department. They also had documents that showed the patronage of the State Department to State Department employees who would go and support Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign.
Boom.
There were high-level DNC emails that detailed evidence of Hillary's, quote, psycho-emotional problems, uncontrolled fits of anger, aggression, and cheerfulness, and that then-Secretary Clinton was allegedly on a daily regimen of heavy tranquilizers. Then CIA Director Brennan and the intelligence community mischaracterized intelligence and relied on dubious substandard sources to create a contrived false narrative that Putin developed a quote-unquote clear preference for Trump. Brennan and the IC misled lawmakers by referencing the debunked Steele dossier to assess quote-unquote Russia's plans and intentions, falsely suggesting that this dossier had intelligence value when he knew that it was discredited. The intelligence community excluded significant intelligence and ignored or selectively quoted reliable intelligence that contradicted the intelligence community assessment's key findings on Putin's alleged support for Trump. Including this intelligence reporting would have exposed the ICA's claim as implausible, if not ridiculous. The intelligence community assessment omitted reliably sourced information, such as how some Russian intelligence officials were quote-unquote planning for candidate Hillary Clinton's victory, while others assessed neither Trump nor Clinton would respect Russia's interests. As was reflected in the ODNI documents that we released on Friday, multiple intelligence community assessments released in the months leading up to the November 2016 election concluded that Russia had neither the intent nor capability to impact the outcome of the U.S. election. On December 5th of 2016, the FBI and ODNI gave the House Intelligence Committee its first post-election classified briefing, in which there was no mention of Putin aspiring to elect Trump by either agency. The Presidential Daily Brief, drafted on December 8th of 2016, stated that no Russian or criminal actors impacted vote counts. This document was pulled just hours before it was to be published due to quote-unquote new guidance. If it had been published, it would have been briefed to both President Obama and President-elect Donald Trump. On December 9th, 2016, a National Security Council meeting was called to gather President Obama's senior national security officials, which included CIA Director Brennan, then Obama DNI James Clapper, Susan Rice, and others. Following that secret meeting, DNI Clapper's assistant sent an email to the intelligence community with the subject line, POTUS tasking on Russia election meddling, tasking ODNI leaders to create a new assessment per the president's request.
Unbelievable.
The House Intelligence Committee oversight report that we released today reveals that, quote, unlike routine intelligence community analysis, the intelligence community assessment was a high-profile product ordered by the president, President Obama. It directed senior intelligence community agency heads and created an intelligence community assessment limited to just five analysts using one principal drafter. This is not something that occurs in the normal path of producing an intelligence community assessment that reflects the views across the intelligence community. The production of this intelligence community assessment was subject to unusual directives directly from the president and senior political appointees, especially the former director of the CIA, John Brennan.
The House
Intelligence Committee oversight report also shows how later that same day, on December 9th, Brennan ordered the publication of quote-unquote substandard reporting on Russian activities, which had previously been withheld from publication of prior assessments because the information was judged, quote, to have not met longstanding publication standards. Some of the information later used in the Obama-ordered assessment over the objections of veteran CIA officers was quote-unquote unclear or from unknown sources. The Intelligence Committee's oversight report reveals that CIA Director Brennan overruled senior CIA officers who challenged the Obama-ordered intelligence assessment, stating, quote, we don't have direct information that Putin wanted to get Trump elected.
There you go.
Yet, the Obama-directed assessment was published on January 6, 2017, which explicitly stated, quote, We assess Putin and the Russian government aspired to help President-elect Trump's election chances, when possible, by discrediting Secretary Clinton and publicly contrasting her unfavorably to him. End of quote. The CIA and FBI, then led by John Brennan and James Comey, expressed high confidence in this judgment, while the NSA expressed moderate confidence. Yet, as the report we released today shows, the ICA, the intelligence community assessment, did not cite any report where Putin indicated helping Trump win was an objective.
Because it wasn't. Because he didn't want Trump to win. And they knew that. But they told everybody he did. They told everybody that he did want Trump to get elected, because that was the idea. In January of 2017, before the president was sworn into office, President-elect Trump at the time, it was to set the table that his presidency was a direct result of Vladimir Putin. And it would go on to lead to an HBO movie. It would go on to lead to so many things, including the Mueller investigation and costing the taxpayers, what, $100 million? Now, this is very specific information that the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, is giving here. This is very significant information, very detailed. This House Intelligence Committee report that's released today is very significant and very detailed. This is not like throwing spaghetti to the wall and seeing what sticks. This is quotes. This is facts. This is unearthing everything. My favorite part is that Hillary Clinton was heavily tranquilized. Elephant tranquilizers. All right, keep going here.
The opposite is true. With regards to the Steele dossier, we now know that one of the source documents that the Obama administration used in the creation of this intelligence assessment in January of 2017 was none other than the discredited, unverified Steele dossier. The House Intel report states, quote, contradicting public claims by then CIA Director Brennan that the dossier was not in any way incorporated into this intelligence assessment. The dossier was referenced in the intelligence assessment's main body text and further detailed in a two-page assessment annex. John Brennan lied, and he denied using this dossier in this intelligence assessment that President Obama ordered because he knew it was discredited. It was a politically motivated, manufactured document. He directed senior CIA officials to use it anyway. CIA officer told the House Intelligence Committee staff as they investigated this, quote, the director of the CIA, John Brennan, refused to remove it. And when confronted with the dossier's many flaws, responded, quote, yes, but doesn't it ring true? Even the bipartisan Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report published in 2020 criticized the FBI's handling of the Steele dossier, noting its completely unverified nature and purposeful sidestepping of intelligence community procedures in its use. Now, President Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Brennan, James Clapper, James Comey, and others, including their mouthpieces in the media, knowingly lied as they repeated the contrived narrative that was created in this January 2017 intelligence community assessment with high confidence as though it were fact. John Brennan, as CIA director, stated in a memo to his agency staff in December of 2016, saying, quote, there is strong consensus among us on the scope, nature, and intent of Russian interference in our presidential election. This was reported by NBC News, confirming that Brennan, along with James Clapper and James Comey, agreed with the CIA's assessment that Russia intervened to help Trump win the presidency. As Obama's Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper was tasked with overseeing the creation of this assessment in January of 2017 by President Obama, and he expressed confidence in its findings. In a 2018 interview with the Harvard Gazette, he talked about how he provided Trump with the same classified assessment that President Obama received, which included the high confidence judgment that Putin directly ordered the hacking and election interference. Clapper then went on to add, I think they, the Russians, actually influenced the outcome.
Lie after lie after lie by these people. Lie after lie after lie by these people in the Intelligence Committee. Now, after she gave this report, she was asked a series of questions. And, you know, she stressed she's not a lawyer. The question, of course, do you think that there was criminality here by former President Barack Obama? Do you think that that's the case? And do you think that, and she keeps saying, you know, we've referred this to the Justice Department. I'm not an attorney. We will continue to release this directly. And we will continue to ask questions. Here was one from, I think it was NBC.
Just two questions, but to begin on that. The president yesterday, you've inferred that the former president helped lead a coup. Based on what you now see, do you believe President Obama is guilty of treason?
I'm leaving the criminal charges to the Department of Justice. I'm not an attorney, but as I've said previously, when you look at the intent behind creating a fake manufactured intelligence document that directly contradicts multiple assessments that were created by the intelligence community, the expressed intent and what followed afterward can only be described as a years-long coup and a treasonous conspiracy against the American people, our republic, and an attempt to undermine President Trump's administration.
The Senate Intelligence Committee spent several years looking into this and unanimously agreed in a bipartisan fashion, Secretary of State Rubio was a member of that committee, that there was no political interference. There was a years-long Justice Department investigation into this as well that also concluded no political interference. So help us, from a 50,000-foot level, explain, what do you now have that refutes those two?
Sure. I will encourage you, in my role as the Director of National Intelligence, my job, again, as I said when I came into this role, was to make sure that we are telling the truth to the American people and that we are ensuring that the intelligence community is not being politicized. So I'm not asking you to take my word for it. I'm asking you and the media to conduct honest journalism and the American people to see for yourself in the documents that we've released now, close to 200 pages that point in multiple references, multiple examples, to include comments that have been made by senior intelligence professionals who are some still working within these agencies today that confirm the conclusions that we have drawn, that President Obama directed an intelligence community assessment to be created to further this contrived false narrative that ultimately led to a years-long coup to try to undermine President Trump's presidency.
And it's your belief that those two previous investigations missed that or covered it up?
I'm telling you to look at the evidence. Look at the evidence, and you will know the truth.
I don't think they had all the details.
Thanks, Caroline.
That's the bottom line.
Thanks, Director Gabbard.
I don't think they had all the evidence at the time for those committees, and that's you know the bottom line. And if they did, they might have come up with different conclusions. They might have reached a different conclusion. I mean, that's the thing. Look, this is the biggest political scandal of our lifetime. This is, in my opinion, I mean, my God, I mean, this is bigger, way bigger than them covering for Biden's mush brain. And that was bad. I thought that was bad. But then this comes out and you're like, oh, my God. Like Biden's mush brain now seems like child's play compared to this, does it not? Child's play. She took another question from the liberal media. Let's grab this.
Revealed that the Obama administration did not publish a December 2016 presidential daily briefing that demonstrated that Russia did not steal the election. Trump was receiving these briefings at the time because he was president-elect. Are you of the view that that information was kept out of the briefing because then president-elect Donald Trump would have seen it?
I don't have any documents that speak to exactly what the new guidance was that was given as the reason for pulling that document, which, by the way, still has never been published until we released it last week, Friday. One could assume that they didn't want President Trump to see a document that came from the intelligence community that would contradict the Russia hoax narrative that began through the Hillary Clinton campaign with the Steele dossier.
One more. Maybe either for you or Caroline, the president said yesterday that Obama committed treason. Do you or the White House believe that the Supreme Court's immunity decision protects Obama from prosecution?
Look,
I can speak to the president's feelings on this matter. He spoke to all of you yesterday in the Oval Office, but I also spoke to him about this morning. And he wants to see all those who perpetuated this fraud against our country, who betrayed our country and the Constitution, to be thoroughly investigated and held accountable. And it's been, 10 years of this. And
I think Will Chamberlain, who was on the show yesterday, brought up this point that Obama may be protected under presidential immunity, but it's the conspiracy around everybody who tried to then take down this president, the defamation of this man, all these other things. So even if Obama happens to be protected by presidential immunity, and there's disagreements on that, Will Chamberlain, who's with the Article 3 Project, disagrees with his boss on the issue, Mike Davis. But that doesn't mean that Obama's off the hook here, because there's this conspiracy then after he leaves office to work with all these people in the intelligence community and then to go out there and to keep pushing this lie and keep pushing this lie and keep pushing this lie that Donald Trump was a Russian agent, that all of this was that he was Putin's B. I mean, Stephen Colbert even one time made a fellatio joke about Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Part of what would be of the many reasons why they would ultimately get rid of Stephen Colbert, because he's not funny. But I mean, I remember when I think Jimmy Kimmel made a similar joke about that. So they all made those comments. But what you just heard here was the director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, a person who I told you is a upstanding, legit person whose eyes I looked into. An honest broker, the right person for the job. Thank God. I mean, thank God she's there. And thank God she took the time to lay all this out in detail today at the White House press briefing. And I know that, it's not the kind of thing where I would normally want to bring such a long thing to you, but I think it's really important to do, because this is pretty unprecedented in our history. Here was another key question that Tulsi was asked today at the White House press briefing. Take a listen to this one.
Widely accepted conclusion that Russia worked to influence the 2016 election, but did not successfully manipulate any votes. How do you respond to critics like former President Obama and also others on the Hill who say that the administration is conflating apples and oranges here, conflating allegations of actual hacking of voter machines and allegations of interference generally?
I think it's a disservice to the American people that former President Obama's office and others who are criticizing the transparency that is being delivered by releasing these documents. They are doing a disservice to the American people and trying to deflect away from their culpability in what is a historic scandal and negative action towards the American people and our Democratic Republic. The answer to that statement can very clearly be found throughout all of the documents that we have released, again, showing that Russia has took action to try to sow discord in the election, but showed no preference for or against any singular candidate.
You've long been an opponent of weaponization in government. How do you respond to criticism that referring Obama administration officials and even potentially the former president is just more weaponization, and this is a potential race to the bottom?
I think that's...
I'll answer that question. Tulsi Gabbard here is cleaning up the weaponization of government. Tulsi Gabbard's job right now as the director of national intelligence is to clean up the mess that was made by these people who weaponized our government and attempted a coup against the president of the United States of America, who used their intelligence and law enforcement powers, just like we talked about yesterday with Professor John Yoo, to subvert the will of the people and to take out the duly elected president of the United States. She's playing cleanup on aisle nine now, is what she's doing. She's not engaging in weaponization. She's exposing the weaponization that took place, just like Edward Snowden did, who, by the way, deserves a pardon, and something Tulsi Gabbard has said before, that Edward Snowden deserves a pardon. And now more than ever, I say Edward Snowden deserves a pardon, because Edward Snowden first exposed the power that the intelligence community has to spy on the American people, and that spying on the American people would lead to them being able to infiltrate the Trump campaign and spy on the Trump campaign, manufacture this intelligence, and then ultimately try to bring down the president of the United States of America. So I more than ever say Edward Snowden deserves a pardon. But I'm sorry, let Tulsi Gabbard answer.
A very disrespectful attack on the American people who deserve the truth. They deserve to have faith and trust in the integrity of our democratic republic, which has been undermined by President Obama through his direction of this manufactured fake intelligence document, knowing that it was filled with lies and knowing that it would and could then be used for all of the actions that came after.
Exactly. Exactly right. Caitlin Collins of CNN had a question, and I want to play this exchange for you, too, because I thought it was excellent today. Again, I mean, it's rare that I'm going to play such a thing for you, but I think this is so critical. And I mean, this is everything up my wheelhouse that I've been talking about literally since I got on the radio, which is the weaponization of our government, the spying against the American people. And that spying of the American people, which would ultimately lead to them to infiltrate the Trump campaign, which is why when I said back then, you know, it's not OK for our government to be spying on people. We're like, oh, what do you want to get blown up by terrorists, Rich? I said, no, I don't want them to weaponize this and use this politically against us. And they will one day if we don't stop this. And I remember we had our Talk Radio 1210 WPHT debate many, many, many years ago at the Xfinity Live Center, and we were asked a question about Snowden, and I said the point about Edward Snowden. I said Edward Snowden is a hero. He's not a traitor because he's exposing that our government is violating the Constitution and destroying the Fourth Amendment, and this is going to lead to the government engaging in politics, and that's exactly what happened. I was right. My Zeoli axiom came true. If you allow the liberty, our liberty, if you allow the Constitution to be destroyed in the name of keeping us safe, whatever power you give these people, they will weaponize it and use it against us for political purposes. Boom. Here is a question by Caitlin Collins.
Dr. Gabbard, you referenced the past intelligence reports and assessments on this, including that 2017 one that was signed off, as Ed noted, by every Republican on the Senate intelligence community, including the acting chair of the time, now Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who said in a statement that they did not find any evidence of Russian collusion, but they did find, however, is very troubling, and they found irrefutable evidence of Russian meddling. One, are you saying that he's wrong in that statement that he made then? And secondly, what would you say to people who believe that you're only releasing these documents now to improve your standing with the president after he said that your intelligence assessments were wrong?
Well, first, I want to correct something that you stated, which was citing the Senate Intelligence Committee's report as being one and the same. I think you said the intelligence community. The Senate Intelligence Committee has a very different function than the Office of the Director of National Intelligence.
Thank you.
The evidence and the intelligence that has been declassified and released is irrefutable. I'm going to let Caroline speak to Secretary Rubio.
I'll speak.
Let me just say that, and I'm glad that Tulsi, you know, she's got class and she did not take the bait from Caroline or from Caitlin Collins. But no, this is not Tulsi trying to win back favor of the president of the United States of America. She doesn't need to. She's doing her job here as Director of National Intelligence, and she's doing a hell of a job, too. Dr. Mike is my man. Dr. Mike Veneria, what are you waiting for? Have you not made your appointment yet to see Dr. Mike? Look, if he's good enough for my family, he's good enough for yours. Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com. So last year, Bridget needed a new smile. Her smile was beautiful, but it needed an upgrade because she had veneers and the veneers needed to be replaced. So Dr. Mike gave her a gorgeous smile, beautiful caps. I go to him. My kids go to him. My mother goes to him. I mean, if he's good enough for Mama Zeoli, he's good enough for your family, too. So please make your appointment today. Get your free implant dental consultation. Dr. Mike, for 10 years, 10 consecutive years, other dentists have sent their patients to Dr. Mike and said he is the best of the best. That's who he is, Dr. Mike Veneria, Veneria Dental. I love the music. I love the people in the office. I mean, he's a great conversationalist. We have great chats about things. But most importantly, He's obsessed with care, your care, patient care. These other chain dental offices out there, they're obsessed with one thing, and that's cost. That's not who Dr. Mike Veneria is, and that's the Veneria difference. So stop putting off getting that implant consultation. Do it today. Free implant consultation with my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, and the great team at Veneria Dental, veneriadental.com. That's the show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of it. Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla is up next. Enjoy the rest of your night. Keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Thank you for listening.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.